The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
And welcome back to another Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission on your mind. He is Michael Coleman, the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. By the way, we've done, golly, 150, 160 of these.
I think we're finishing probably 200.
Yeah, and fantastic. They're really, really good. They're catching on. A lot of people have heard some of the most frequent ones, and of course, recent ones that go back and listen to ones in the past, and they're all up wherever you get your favorite podcast, available wherever you get your Tony Curry Radio podcast. And of course, we also have other podcasts, including one called Bite by Bite, which is another one I do with you that specifically talks about the need for food inadequacies and more through the Heart of Alabama Food Bank and Feeding America. Yeah. We'll do that coming up after the show as well. First of all, how are you doing? It's been a little chaotic out there. It's kind of crazy in this world right now. Would you not agree?
Yeah, I think. we're not in the heart of that, thankfully. But we have several colleges here in Alabama. And we have little snippets of some of the campus unrest that's going on, the pro-Palestinian protest and, with the election cycle and the Trump trial. And it's going to be like this until after the election and probably a few months after.
Someone disagree with you and say, we are in the middle of this. This is about as crazy as it gets. I didn't realize there's something called the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace Protest Tracker. Have you seen this?
Oh, I have not.
It's an actual website through Carnegie. And it tracks protests around the world. Currently, over 700 significant anti-government protests have erupted worldwide. This, by the way, was on April 10th. So just imagine what we've done since April 10th. So it's about a month old. 147 countries have experienced a significant protest of some sort. 18% of protests have lasted more than 3 months. Very exciting, very exuberant, very scary. Just depends, I think, on what your age is and what your belief is on. Much like the war itself in Israel and Hamas and the Gaza Strip, there is no easy answers. This was something that was long in the making. It feels a little like a marriage to me. And obviously, we don't know. I can't sit here and talk about politics. I've got an idea of how we got to this point, but it is something that's been unrestful for a long, long period of time. It was just a matter of time. And I think it was even foresaw in the Bible to some extent, but we have a lot of young people out there, 18, yeah. 19, 20 year olds that are obviously protesting. Now I know there's a lot of people that will make the point that the 40% of all the protesters have nothing to do with this particular fight. They just want unjust. They just want to be chaotic. Yeah. And for whatever reason, whenever you have something like this, there are going to be factions of other people that have nothing to do with this particular situation, but feel the iron's hot. And maybe I can further my agenda because there are so many people here. So you show up there and next thing you know, there's food trucks. And I mean, it's gotten out of control. What are your initial thoughts based on your age, based on what you've seen in your life, based on your historical references, what you know about this country? It was formed on these protests. We had the Boston Tea Party. We can go back through history and see that it's been like this for a while. There haven't been a lot of times in the United States or really in this world where it's just been plain peaceful, where it's like, wow, this is a really good time to be alive in this world. There's always something going on. But does it make you uncomfortable? Does it give you pride? What does it do for you?
Well, we do have a long history in our nation of protest, and it's something that's really comes with freedom. Is you're going to find people standing up for issues that you may not see eye to eye with them, but we certainly have the the rights to do that. What I see that's happening now on college campuses is a little bit like we saw back at Vietnam. Now, that was really before my time. I was born during Vietnam time, but really was not privy to any of the protests that was going on. But going back and looking back and learning about that time and watching those videos, you would have people who seemingly did not, and this is not everybody, I'm not trying to paint everybody with a broad brush, But you would have a lot of college age kids. So they would come out of their homes. They were taught certain values and they would want to rebel against that and exert their independence. And from a human perspective, we all understand that. They want to blaze their own trail. They don't necessarily just want to take on their parents' values, who may have been pro-war, pro-Vietnam. So they get out and they start protesting. The problem is that so many, and you really see this today, is where they have not taken the time to educate themselves. And so let's say, for instance, that you are pro-Palestinian. Mm-hmm. And that you feel like Israel is oppressing them, it would seem that it would be in your best interest, before you had a microphone shoved in your face, that you would kind of understand a little bit of the history, a little bit of what the Palestinians stand for. What are they after? And I don't want this to come across as some, you know, pro-Israel, anti-Palestinian discussion, but just for a couple of things that really stand out to me. So one, you've had several gay organizations that come out for pro-Palestine, and you see them being interviewed, and then you say, okay, you do realize, are you aware that the policy that Muslims have, and in Palestine, is that if you're gay, they can throw you off the top of a building. Mm-hmm. And of course, we saw this happening in other Muslim countries. And then you see this look on the face, like, so you're doing something, you're protesting for a group of people that not only would hate you because you're gay, but totally intolerant, they would actually kill you.
Yeah.
And then you see where, when they're asked that and they're confronted with those facts, they go, no, I wasn't aware of that. And it kind of just takes the wind out of their sails. But that's what happens when we rush into defending something that without really taking the time to research and understand it. But I get it from a human perspective. They're trying to find meaning. They're trying to find purpose. And so you've seen this throughout our history. Lots of times it's just that rebellion that I'm going to hold on to something. I'm going to let this issue define me. But the problem is, you get going down this road, as many of the war protesters did. And then you find out what you're actually defending, and it really does conflict with whatever core value system that you have. And you see that coming more and more, because I just heard today on a podcast I was listening to while I was driving that these two students from Columbia were told, hey, they're protesting at NYU, because, you know, they kind of mm-hmm. shut down Columbia. So they went over there and started protesting at NYU. And so somebody came up and said, well, what are you protesting for NYU about? And the girl goes, well, I'm not really sure. I haven't been told. And she turns to her friend, and her friend goes, well, you know, we just kind of came from Columbia. I'm not really sure. And then she said, you know, I really wish I was more educated on this. But they were there screaming and defending and not even knowing what it is they're defending.
And I think that's Mike, let me interject here. I think that's where a lot of people in this, not just this country, this world feel right now, because we don't know all the details. The details that we do know would point in a direction that there's no easy way to fix this. There are no winners. And again, you know, I equate this to a bad marriage gone bad. There's no winners here. There are no winners here. There's going to be a lot of innocent lives taken. It's already been done. War is hell. It's not going to be over. And you know, I think a lot of people, certainly at that age, are still trying to define, you're exactly right, with their character, who they are, what they stand for. They want to be part of something bigger because it makes them feel important. That's why you don't see 60 and 70-year-olds out there, although you do. And because of that, they just want to be part of something special. And you know, I've heard a lot of people say, "What are you doing tonight? We're gonna go start a protest, or we're gonna go because it gives them." And you know, in a lot of cases, you're like, "Boy, I wish you had this. I wish you had this motivation and passion at work. You know, I wish you had this. I right. wish you had this at home in our family life. You know, you're gonna get right. all excited about this thing that you really don't." And so, but talk a little bit about just, I mean, the fact that we have all these young people. That they want to be part of something bigger, and I do believe they're trying to make change, and I think that's a good thing. But how important it is to obviously be knowledgeable about it, but knowing that chances are you're not going to run into anyone down there that knows anything about this particular confrontation we're having.
Well, there's all sorts of lessons for us to learn. That don't be quick to take somebody's side because you're their friend. And I've been guilty of that before. We probably all have, like, hey, I like this guy. He's fighting with this guy. I don't like the other guy, so I'm going to stand behind him. And that's actually gotten me burned a couple of times. It's kind of why this issue really matters to me. And I had to make up my mind a long time ago that, look, I want to hear both sides of the story. You can't be objective if you villainize one side. The truth of the matter is, my heart goes out to the Palestinian people. However, back in, I think it was 2005 when they had an election. So for the last, maybe 2007, anyway, when Hamas was voted in, Hamas has been in control ever since. And Hamas kills its own people. But the bottom line is, and I get it, they're being oppressed by their own government. But They continue to allow this to happen. I'm not saying it's right. Maybe they feel like they don't have a choice. Maybe they're genuinely being oppressed. But they have been self-governing in the Gaza area by Hamas for, I don't know, 17 years or so.
Yeah.
And so it's amazing when they say
something that Israel actually gave them. They gave them that right to do so,
yeah,
correct?
That's right. Yeah, they're governing themselves.
Israel created this monster. Yes, go ahead.
But when you hear people, and these are educated people, these are journalists who are pro-Palestinian, they go, well, they've been oppressed, they've been occupied by Israel. And then somebody comes along with Israel and goes, we haven't governed there for, you know, two decades. And they're like, oh, well, but you have them surrounded, you know. But the reality is they don't have them surrounded. If anybody would take the time to look at a map, their southern border goes into the Sinai, which is governed by Egypt. Mm-hmm. And Egypt does not want these people either.
No.
So, and Jordan has already said, we're not taking refugees because they know it is an unstable society. Now, how the propaganda works is they have us focus on the children that are dying or the children that are starving. And that hurts everybody's heart because it's not that child's fault. That child is only doing what it's told to do, and it's made to suffer because the environment it's in, and that is heartbreaking. But you can't allow world opinion to sway you because of that, because they're trying to take out this oppressive terrorist organization. And I think by any stretch of the imagination, most people can look at what Hamas does and see what happened on October 7th and on many years before that and understand they're a terrorist situation. I will tell you something. One of the most fascinating people that I have ever encountered, and it's mostly through the media, about 10 years ago or so, I read a book called Son of Hamas. And it's a story, and if you just Google or YouTube, Son of Hamas, he's been invited to speak at all the major universities. He recently did a 2-hour talk with Jordan Peterson. The reason this is so fascinating is he was raised in the West Bank. Raised in Ramallah. Yeah, in the West Bank, not Gaza. His father was one of the founding members of Hamas. So he was brought up in that, but was arrested, and he goes into an Israeli prison, and he tells how he began to look at how the Muslims and Gaza and all that, they were oppressive to their own people inside that prison. It wasn't the Israelis. So he I'm trying to make this too long. He goes and he actually keeps his father from being murdered by agreeing to spy for Israel. But he tells this really fascinating story. When you talk about indiscriminate killing that Israel's being accused of right now, there was a terrorist that they had been looking for 6 months. He finally pops up and he goes to be put in his car. And he's involved in this operation with Israeli intelligence. But they said his daughter is in the car with him. And they cancel that operation, even though they've been looking for this terrorist for 6 months, because they said they were not going to blow up the car to get him and blow up his daughter. Mm-hmm. And he said, I have been behind the scenes. I grew up with Hamas and my father. He said, I also spent 10 years as an Israeli asset working with their intelligence. These are not people who kill indiscriminately. Now, it's just fascinating to talk about that, to try to, because all of the nations and all that who hate the Jews and who hate Israel are trying to blame them for every atrocity. And Israel looks around and goes, we have enemies on every side of us. If we don't fight, we are going to be eliminated from the face of the earth. And so I tend to side and go, I'm not saying everything Israel's done has been right. They've made mistakes. They've admitted some. There's probably some they haven't admitted. But, man, it's so easy for us when we're bordered by friends in Canada and a friendly government in Mexico and two oceans, mm-hmm. that we don't know what it's like, that our very survival depends on us fighting against people trying to kill us every day. And if we did, I'm not sure that the average American would not view the world exactly like the typical person in Israel views it today.
I mean, you're basically living with a hornet's nest in your bedroom. You go to bed at night, yeah. you've got a live hornet's nest in your bedroom, and it's just sitting right there, and you never know when someone's going to go up there and poke it, and next thing you know, you got a big problem. Talk a little bit about, and I want to get to the biblical aspect of all this in just a few minutes, and also talk about would you hire a protester, but talk a little bit about, we've been on this earth long enough, and I didn't understand this growing up, but when someone's religious, and it doesn't even really have to be religious, but I'll say it for this case, religious ideology is so off the charts, but it is so believed by that faction of individuals. And, you know, people that are willing to die, obviously, yeah. for their cause. We thought a life was worth something, and it don't seem to be worth anything anymore. People are willing to go ahead and put, you know, 15,000 gallons of gasoline in a van and die for the cause and run right into a thing. And that just seems to be nothing anymore. That's what we remember, the kamikazes. We used to think, wow, these people are crazy. Well, that's nothing now. People do that all the time. But when you're dealing with someone whose ideology is so set in stone and they believe it, we could sit all day long and explain to them why God is good and why we must live in love and not fear and why do you live this way, but they know nothing else in their lives besides that way of functioning. Can you talk about that a little bit? And have you been around anything like that?
Yeah, I will tell you. So a couple of things, and just going back to that example that I was sharing with the son of Hamas, he viewed the world he did because it was his only environment. Then he gets put over here and he begins to see something else. And now he has the ability to evaluate what truth is. Now, ironically, he ends up becoming a believer in Christ and a follower of Christ. And at the end of his book, he says the Israeli-Palestinian conflict will never be resolved because they are not seeking, there's no reconciliation in their views. There's enemies and you have to fight against your enemies. There's no forgiveness. And there's no reconciliation. And he talks about how that's a cornerstone of Christianity is, forgiveness and reconciliation is as imperfectly as we do that. I will tell you something that it does make me think about. And when I was in Germany, I was in the military back in the 80s, this before the Berlin Wall came down. Everywhere we went in Germany, there was always talk of, hey, be careful what you say because there's spies everywhere. And they had this poster list everywhere we went of these radical terrorists who had done things in the name of socialism, and you know, they were Eastern European or East Germans at the time. And when the wall came down several years later, they were ultimately captured, sometimes 10 to 15 years after they did what they did. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing, by then they'd settled down, they had a spouse, they had children. I look at these radical people today and I say to myself, they are empty vessels. They have no perspective of life. They've never had to get out and work and pay for their college. They're getting it all handed to them for the vast majority, but they don't have any life experience. So I would not be surprised if in 15 years you go back and talk to these very same protesters and their opinions are going to be vastly different. It's just right now you've got a whole bunch of them and they're allowed to rattle off these views and then say, like the protesters at Columbia, hey, we want you to bring some water. We want food. We want these things. And they're like, wait a minute. You're taking over a building and you want them to cater to you. I mean, but that's the yep. thinking. That's how empty their thinking is. And they have no idea of how bad they look to the average person. Forget whether you're a Democrat, forget whether you're a Republican, forget any of that, forget what your background, your religion is. This flies in the face of what most people value in life. To your question about whether I would hire them, it's interesting. There's a bill being put forth right now.
Hey, Michael, hold on one sec. Okay. Yeah. Hold on, my SIM card is just stopped. Hold on. We don't want to miss any of this stuff here. There you go. Yeah, it just said I had an issue and it just stopped. Okay, can you pick up right where you were talking? Yeah. Go ahead. You're rolling. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Wait a minute. Let me think. I was fixing a transition to.
I know. My apologies.
No. That's okay. That's my ADHD. If I ever lose, I can't never get it back. I'm just trying to think about.
I've got a question for you if you want.
Yeah, go ahead. Jump in.
We're talking to Michael Coleman, of course, a show we do every single week. We talk about life, man. We talk about all kinds of things. It has a business backbone. He is, of course, the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. Michael, you know, we were talking about protest and just how crazy it is out in the world right now. I don't think people remember, or certainly our youngsters, our kids that are going to college right now, realize you 18-year-olds out there, when you and I wanted to have a protest or we wanted to get a group together, how did we do that? We posted crap on polls. We got on our handheld phones,
that's right,
our landlines, and we'd get on the phone and we'd have a list of 100 people we'd have to call. It would take days to reach out.
By then, we didn't care about the issue anymore.
Yeah, and say, this Saturday, we're going to get, and it could be a good thing, but this Saturday, we're getting together to have a celebration of this. Or, you know, we don't like the way the school's being run, so we're all going to meet in Veterans Park. Please tell your friends. It was all word of mouth. Now with social media, if you get one influencer, you could be hitting hundreds of thousands of people at one time. I mean, we've seen this a million times where someone says, you know, I started this thing yesterday, and by the time I got finished, I had over 1 million followers. How many people would love to just be able to do that? I mean, we'd all like to be followers and influencers in that way. But I mean, it can flip that quickly. We, as business owners, look at everything when we're hiring people. Would you hire a protester?
Sure. Well, I would tell you no. And because we do screen at times we'll look at somebody puts in an application. So let's say I get 20 applications for a job and we're like, we're going to interview the top five, and that's just off their resume. This is without talking with them. But sometimes if we're like, hey, you know, I wonder, I really got 8 here that may be good. We go look at their social media. And if they're shown party, if they were shown out there doing a protest or something like that, they would absolutely all, because all that projects is trouble. I find it interesting too that part of the problem is they've never had any consequences for their actions, so they've trashed some of these universities. But
let me back up just a little bit though.
Okay,
you go to someone's website, their Instagram, whatever, and you see pictures of them holding up signs or whatever, and it's all vanilla. It's not, you know, there's not hatred, there's no anti-Semitic type of talk, but they are in a big group of people. That's a no-no for you right off the bat. I mean, is it based on where you work? Or I mean, because I'm kind of the same way. I kind of feel like I was going to ask you the question: What are these protests actually doing? What are we actually getting out of people protesting? Right. Are we actually moving the needle? And so, would you not further that question? By the way, I noticed on your Instagram you were down at Lynn Park a couple of years ago for this LGBTQ thing. Whatever, would you care to explain that a little bit, or would you not even question that?
Well, no, I would try to understand. But if it was something that has gotten such national media attention as this, then that's kind of helped define it a little bit. And lots of times people, but what I would try to convey to that person in some way is, and other people, is be careful what you, I mean, we're all proud of it and you're trying to find meaning. So you go slap your face up there and you say, screw the police. Now, a policeman may have done something wrong, but if you say screw the police, most business leaders are going to look at that as they're somebody who is looking for trouble.
Yeah.
They are anti-authoritarian, which means they're going to come into your place, at least you sense that they are going to be very quick to buck the trends, to be very difficult, even rally people against the organization if there was something that they didn't like. And so when you're looking at two people and let's say they're somewhat equal, you're like, well, no, I'm not going to take the one that I believe is going to bring in some trouble, because you can have an organization of ones that you've hired that you think are absolutely the best, and you still have people problems.
Yeah.
Those still exist, even under the best of conditions. You're not going to, and most people for legal reasons would say, oh, no, you can't do that. You can't. I don't care what they say for legal reasons. I'm talking about real humans looking at this and making a decision. They're going to say, this person has trouble. They don't have any resume to speak of. They've gone to a school. They've lived a very cushioned life. Here they are. They're protesting. It's fine to protest. It's fine to speak up. You have the right as American to do that. But that doesn't necessarily mean that an employer is going to look at that as an endearing quality. A lot of them look at that as, that's somebody I don't want anything to do with. And that goes back to these consequences. This is what's so maddening, is when it happens and you tear up your building, you know, you take over a building, you tear it up, or you tear up your grounds. And I've seen the grounds when the police took everybody off, just how nasty it is. It looks like a bomb went off. So some of this, I was fixing to say a minute ago, and they're talking about no forgiveness. There's a bill going for no forgiveness of student loans for people who participate or who do things that are illegal.
Yeah.
So for the first time, these people who are just going out there and just, hey, I want my face on TV. I want to scream at you. I want to curse at you. I want to flip you off. I just want to be a rebel rouser. Now there might actually be some consequences. But certainly it would be consequences from when it comes time to employ you. Because if you're out there proud of that now, my guess is you're going to learn some hard lessons that life has to offer you when it comes time to start making your living.
Certainly not to compare the two, because they're two totally different things. But it reminds me of the insurrection a little bit. It reminds me of January, because, I mean, everyone wanted to be part of this mob mentality. They wanted to be down there for the party, and half the people didn't even know what the hell was going on, or that anyone had been shot. And next thing you know, your face is all over TV and you're losing your job, and your wife's like, what the hell were you doing? What were you thinking?
Yeah. That's where you got to be careful, because you could say, well, I'm pro Trump, and so you make that okay.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we have a right to protest. Well, these people are doing the same thing. So it can't be about the it can't be about the cause. It has to be about our process and what we're portraying and what we're doing. Yes, you have the right to do it. I'm not saying they had the right to do what they did on January 6th, but you have the right to peaceful protest. But when you go beyond that, and not only do you risk looking really dumb, which most of these college students are, because they're for the most part empty vessels, just minds of mush that have not yet been formed. But second of all, there's real life consequences. Now, I will begin to admire you if you say, I'm so passionate, I'm so anti-war, I'm so this, I'm doing this knowing that it may be more difficult to get a job, knowing that it may, because that's how our society is, but I'm so committed to this. I'm so passionate. But I guarantee if you line those people up and said, you're wanting a six-figure job when you get out, but nobody's going to hire you, are you willing to not be hired for the next 3 years till this dies down and your name kind of dies down?
Yeah.
Would you be willing to suffer that? And you know, most would, I guess, would say no.
So what has history taught us about protest and how they work, and do they work? Listen, I don't think there's anybody in the United States right now that wants to have this war going on. I don't think anybody wants the Palestinians to be oppressed, and I don't think anybody wants Hamas to be in charge of anything. And certainly we hate for all the innocent bystanders, the babies and the mothers, and oh my gosh, it's horrible. By bringing notoriety to it and marching at the University of Illinois and Minnesota and USC. And the other thing I think is amazing too, we're always talking about Columbia and Harvard. It seems like because there are smartest schools in this country, it seems like everything starts there. Most of us like me, we're like, could never get into Harvard, is like those knuckleheads, those crazy smart people. They must be onto something, right? Because I'm not out there. So does it work? Does it?
I go back to the civil rights movement. And I think what happened was when you see people like Martin Luther King Jr., who was really just trying to be able to sit down and have a meal at the same restaurant, drink from the same fountain, use the same bathroom, go get the same education, just have the same opportunities. But he wasn't doing it by cursing out people. He wasn't doing it with violence. He was doing it with intellect. He understood the issues. He had compassion. He was able to speak to the real issues that affected people's hearts. And that's why there's a holiday after him. So you really see where somebody who knows how to who is familiar with the issues can win hearts and can create movements, effective movements.
Something he did too real quick. Yeah. A lot of people don't realize. And I can't say he did this in every instance. But as far as I know, he walked away from violence every time it came to his face. When they were on their knees on the bridge, they were like, "Get up!" Or we're flying. And he got up. He's like, "You know what? Okay." And now you don't see that. Police officers are saying, "Get up and get out of here," and they're not leaving. They're coming back and building these things again. And we're not. You know, you talked about the authoritarian part of this whole thing. We don't respect broad brush. We do not respect authority. We do not respect those resources that we so desperately need every single day just to live safe and sound in this country. And, you know, he always seemed like he was like, you know what, this violence is not the way to go. We're not going to do this. That's something that why I love him.
Now,
so
civil disobedience. I saw a guy who sat down and, you know, they did this back in that day where they make the cop come pick them up, but they wouldn't resist. They just would sit down and the cop would take them off, take them to jail. Well, this cop all of a sudden grabbed this guy under his arm and then grabbed him by his leg. And that guy starts hollering and squealing that he's being abused. You just, you know, then he just comes across like a crybaby.
Uh-huh.
They don't want to, they want to take over a building, but they don't want to do the tough things. And that's why I just have so much admiration for what was done. They were fighting for human rights. It won people's hearts and minds over. It didn't. It was tough changing the South, but look at how he did it, and he changed the world because it was a righteous issue. But he did it the right way. So you got to have more than just the issue. You got to have the issue. Talking about what do we learn from this? You got to have the right. You got to have the issue. You have to be able to articulate the issue, but you have to be able to live by your values and be consistent with values that will win other hearts and minds to what you're doing. If not, you're just going to come across like everybody. I think even people who are pro-Palestinian look at these protesters and say, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. You and I come from the same boat. We're firm believers. We're Christians. We believe that if you were born twice, you die once. And if you're born once, you die twice. And we believe that he's coming back. We just don't know when. There's not going to be any telltale signs. We know the horns are going to blast and he's going to be here to take this earth back over. And we're going to have 7 years in the tribulation, the whole nine yards. And I'm thinking to myself, what is God thinking right now that his home country of Israel, Jerusalem, everything that is near and dear to Jesus and our Lord and Father and Savior is going through, and for the most part has been, like you said, surrounded but for years. And I'm thinking to myself, man, if there ever was a time where he'd finally put his foot down and say, you know what, I've had enough. So it's his home city. It's his home. It's his home country. Does that speak to you?
Well, you know what? You look at every generation, you would think, well, 6 million Jews are taken out. You would think, well, surely that would be the time. I mean, every generation has its moment that we think, oh, could this be the end? Because we're like, but that's where we just have to live by faith. And we continue to go through life and try to be a blessing to others and love others and show compassion and try to give people a better example than, unfortunately, what the world itself is displaying right now.
No doubt. Michael, thank you so much. You got any questions? Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Of course, we do our Mission Minded show. It airs at least 5 days a week here on the TKR app. It's fantastic. And of course, we're going to get Michael back on our TV show here, Kiefer and Curry Show. We do a little show on Saturday mornings on television. Love to have you back on, as well as the community bank here of Central Alabama as well. We love having them on. But we thank you so much for your time this week. And make sure you listen up for Bone or Bite by Bite. I always say I want to Bone by Bone. I was thinking of my thing. I always want to say Bone by Bone. Hey, listen, if you don't help out, listen to Bite by Bite. We will only have bones left. So make sure you do Bite by Bite. It's coming up right. Your neck. Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
All right. Enjoyed it.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.